The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get tired of hearing Christians talk as if they somehow know the one and only true God. This seems awfully closed-minded to you. Why do Christians need to insist on one God? Why can't there be many gods? Well, my friend, there's nothing wrong with the idea of multiple gods as a concept. It's just that that's not the way things happen to be. It's not the reality of the situation. If we happened to live in a universe created by many gods, that would have been fine, but we don't. Instead, we exist in a universe brought about by one God. This is the teaching of the Bible, as for reasons to accept the Bible as the Word of God. Now, that's a separate discussion. I've done many shows verifying the accuracy of Scripture, and I'll do many more. But for today, keep in mind that God's existence as one being or several beings does not change simply because of what we choose to believe or choose not to believe. Okay, now some of you are saying to yourselves right now, all right, supposing you're correct, Siegel, supposing there is only one God, couldn't this one God still be reached by alternative religions? Aren't all religions a path to the same God? Aren't all religions true? Isn't it arrogant, Siegel, when Christians claim to have a corner on the truth? Okay, well, careful, my friend. Be a little bit careful here because you are about to fall into your own trap. If one wants to make the statement that all religions are a path to God, that belief is also a truth claim. When people decide that this is the better sounding truth claim, when people decide that this is the humbler truth claim, in short, when people decide that this truth claim is true, then they too are claiming to have a corner on the truth. The issue here is not what sounds true. The issue is what is true. Is it true that all religions are a path to the same God? That's a good question, provided it's a sincere question. Provided you haven't already made up your mind in advance. Provided we study the facts instead of searching for the beliefs which make us sound more politically correct. We will discuss this provocative subject in more detail later on. We'll also take some other interesting Bible questions that have been sent our way. First, some important news, and it is important news, although you'd never guess that if you tend to watch objective journalism such as CNN or MSNBC. Unlike CNN and MSNBC, Fox News offered extensive live coverage of Wednesday's House Oversight Committee hearings. Now, the minute I mentioned Fox News, I know there's a couple of you out there going, oh, Fox News, this guy listens to that right-wing Fox News. I'm going to turn off the radio. All right, well, before you turn off the radio, just hang on for one more minute. I know some of you in college, your professors won't even take a paper if Fox News is the source, because supposedly they aren't as objective as the other networks. Let me tell you something about Fox News. First of all, most of the people that criticize it never watch it, or only watch it in bits and pieces. It shows both sides. There are all kinds of liberals and conservatives that give commentary on Fox News, and they debate themselves. In the hard news department, they're very objective. If you added up all their liberals and all their conservatives, there'd be a lot on both sides. Do they tilt more to the right? Yeah, they tilt a little bit to the right. But the reason it seems like they tilt more is that the other networks tilt about 180 degrees to the left. And they're so far to the left that Fox News looked like it's more on the right by comparison. In fact, some of these networks are in a tizzy that anybody would dare show the other side. For example, I think it's abominable that CNN and MSNBC wouldn't just broadcast the hearings and let us hear them for ourselves. So yes, unlike CNN, unlike MSNBC, Fox News did offer live coverage of the House Oversight Committee hearings. And at that time, three courageous whistleblowers gave testimony that contradicted previous reports from the White House, from the State Department, about exactly what happened in last September's Benghazi attack, killing Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans. At the beginning of the hearings, I just had to try an experiment. I'm home. I'm in front of a TV. I have it on Fox News. I couldn't resist to find out what was going on in the other networks. You see, even though I was watching Fox News, I knew the other two 24-hour cable networks. I knew they would not be covering the hearings. I hadn't heard that, but I knew it like I knew there was a nose on my face, and I just couldn't resist. I had to see for myself, like that curiosity that makes you want to look down a sewer, even though you already know what's there. Sure enough, several flips of a television remote control showed CNN and MSNBC focusing on another major news story of the week instead, Ariel Castro's rape and kidnapping of three women recently rescued after close to a decade of captivity. Now, that is a heart-wrenching story, to be sure. And yes, the Castro incident certainly qualifies as major news. But my friends, in the grand scheme of where we are as a country, it is not as important as evidence of a major scandal and cover-up from our highest government officials. And more interested in occupying the Obama administration's cheerleading section than doing their job as responsible journalists, CNN and MSNBC probably found the Castro story convenient. As the hearing moved on, CNN finally offered some Benghazi coverage. MSNBC showed us nothing at all, nothing in real time. Had these news networks, and I use the word in quotes, had these news networks been a little more interested, they would have heard from the following people. First, Gregory Hicks, former deputy chief of mission in Libya. Eric Nordstrom, former regional security officer, also stationed in Libya. Mark Thompson, former deputy coordinator for operations in the State Department's Counterterrorism Bureau. Thompson testified that his foreign emergency support team was set to launch a rescue in real time because they were alerted when these people were under attack. They were alerted before, days before. They were alerted hours before, during it. But permission to go and launch a support team and a rescue mission was denied, he said, from somebody higher in the chain of command. And then his two fellow whistleblowers also offered damning contradictions to previously spun stories, describing the Obama administration's official investigation spearheaded by a retired diplomat, Thomas Pickering. Nordstrom said, and I'm quoting him, "They stopped short of interviewing people who I personally know who were involved in key decisions." And then when asked for his opinion of U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice's statements on five Sunday morning news shows back in September, claiming that the Benghazi attack was spontaneous violence inspired by a video criticizing the Prophet Muhammad, Hicks says, "I was stunned, my jaw dropped, and I was embarrassed." He was embarrassed because he knew it wasn't true. He knew that Susan Rice knew it wasn't true. He knew that everybody had known immediately what was really going on. And then Hicks also testified that he was demoted for daring to challenge the State Department's version of Benghazi events. This should send chills up your spine, people. And whether one believes the testimonies or not, that's all people say, well, maybe they weren't telling the truth. Whether you believe them or not, would we agree that they deserved the attention of 24-hour cable news networks? Well, not offering live coverage, MSNBC eventually, as the day moved on, mentioned the testimony at the hearing, and they mentioned it as somewhat of a non-news event. Evening Hardball host Chris Matthews, in his never-ending effort to spare citizens the ordeal of watching hearings for themselves and making up their own minds, declared that Republicans want to, and I'm quoting him now, they want to blame President Obama and Hillary Clinton for this thing called Benghazi. Yeah, this thing, this little thing called Benghazi. And that was Chris Matthews' great coverage. They're trying to blame Hillary and Obama. Wow, that's brilliant, Mr. Matthews. Why, nobody would have known that. Seriously? The president and former Secretary of State were under suspicion? Wow. What an incredible insight. Never mind mentioning the reasons for suspicion. Never mind talking about the evidence for the suspicion. It's all about partisanship, right? And you, Mr. Matthews, are never, ever partisan. Your program is just laced with hard-hitting, objective journalism. Okay, look, folks. Even if all the networks devoted more attention to this story, I got to tell you, most Americans have displayed only a microscopic interest in the Libya attack. Chances are Benghazi will have little or no effect on Hillary's 2016 election bid. And neither will it diminish President Obama in the eyes of his groupies. Both politicians seem to have one thing in common, Teflon. Nothing sticks to them. Part of the reason is fear. People want to avoid being called sexist. People want to avoid being called racist. PC talking points are careful to explain that Hillary's adversaries simply have a problem with female presidential candidates, even if they supported Michelle Bachmann in 2012. Well, if they have trouble with female candidates, why did they support Bachmann? Oh, well, yeah, sure, if you're going to bring up that. And of course, people who do not march in step with Obama, well, we know the reason. They can only be mooted by venomous disdain and racism. They don't like African-American presidents. Never mind that they might be the very ones hoping to see Dr. Ben Carson run in 2016 because they appreciate his values. Accusation and demonization of opponents is only half the recipe to Democratic success. Charismatic personality is also a key ingredient. All Obama has to do is give another speech about how he has left no stone unturned to get to the bottom of Benghazi. If people believed that drivel before his re-election, if they also believed him when he promised that Obamacare would never fund abortions, if they also believed him when he said your premiums would go down, if they also believed him when he said there would be no death panels, if they also believed him when he blamed Republicans for sequestration, even though the sequestration was his idea, if they believe all those things, and they are likely to follow this Pied Piper every time he plays his flute. Hillary gives good speeches, too. Remember her speech back in January before the Senate committee when she was being questioned about the State Department's role in the Benghazi disaster? She says, what difference does it make? Was it because of a protest or was it because of guys went for a walk one night and they decided to kill some Americans? What difference? At this point, what difference does it make? And she yelled it and she said it passionately. And the Republicans backed off and basically walked away with their tails between their legs. But there's a lot they could have said to her, and I hope they bring her in again. Because I think anybody could question this lady. I'll do it right now. Actually, Mrs. Clinton, in answer to your question, what difference does it make? Well, it seems, Mrs. Clinton, it makes quite a difference. You see, strong evidence suggests that a request for better security was denied before the attack. Military personnel were ordered to stand down during the attack, and the American public was lied to about what actually happened after the attack. A government which gets away with this can get away with anything. And when news networks enable such cover-ups, it makes even more of a difference. Now, I should say, to their credit, ABC News, following the hearings, obtained copies of State Department emails which proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that everybody knew this was a terrorist attack from the beginning and the administration simply lied by claiming it was a result of a YouTube video. Well, good for you, ABC News. I wasn't sure I'd live to see the day, but shame on you, MSNBC. Shame on you, CNN. Again, what difference will any of this make? It should make a lot of difference. Unfortunately, I doubt if it will make any difference. Not to our present culture. They care more about who's going to win on American Idol next week. Most people don't follow this stuff. Makes a difference to God, though. Makes a difference to God. There will be a day of judgment when everybody's life is over, when time itself comes to a stop. Every human soul will stand before God. He will not be impressed with our speeches because he reads our minds. And he knows our hearts. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'd like to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day. And here to discuss Mother's Day with me, my co-host, Dana Wright. Always a pleasure to have her. Now, you should know Dana is herself a mother, but that's not all. Not only is Dana a mother, but I've met Dana's mother. Dana is also a daughter. Jumping Jiminy. It's a small world. And I'll go, you know, Dana's also a sister because I met her brother. And Dana's a cousin. Dana's an aunt. She's just like a walking incarnation of the United Nations right here. Dana, great to have you on our program.
Thank you.
Well, Dana, we're in the same Sunday school class.
Yes.
I tried this out this morning, and I got a good enough response that I'm going to try it out again. I need to talk about two of my favorite passions. One of them is David Letterman. I'm a big fan of David Letterman, more so in the past when he didn't say such stupid things about politics. But I still think he's a funny guy, and I've always loved his top 10 lists. But David Letterman, of course, didn't invent the top 10 list. The top 10 list is very ancient. It goes back to this thing called the 10 Commandments. And that leads to my other passion. As you know, Dana, on this program, often I talk about archaeology that backs up the Bible. Well, interestingly enough, there was a recent archaeological dig, and it included famous sayings from biblical mothers. We're more familiar with these heroes, a little less familiar with their mothers. And a lot of people are interested in knowing what a mother would say, especially on Mother's Day. They range from the time of the Garden of Eden all the way up to Jesus's time. And interestingly enough, Dana, there were 10 of them. Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
An ancient top 10 list found on an archaeological dig.
That's amazing.
And what I thought I'd do, just to be original and like nobody else, is I thought I'd start with the 10th one and read down to the first one, because I know nobody's ever done it that way before.
That would be original.
That would be very original. So are you ready, Dana?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Poor Dana. She's kind of the Ed McMahon today. Edma McMahon, I should say. Yes. You're a lot prettier than Ed McMahon. I can say that categorically.
So.
Ed McMahon's a nice guy. I even saw him in person because I saw the Johnny Carson show live one time. You're much prettier than Ed McMahon.
Thank you. There's
no contest. I'll just go on and okay, Dana.
Get to your top 10.
Okay, the top 10 biblical mothers' famous sayings. Of course, Jesus' mother. We should start with Jesus. Jesus' mother, Mary. Now you have to think about this one a little bit. She says, of course you're Jewish, half Jewish on your mother's side.
Yeah, that one I had to think about for a minute because I thought, half Jewish? You don't think about that.
Uh-huh. So how did you figure that out, Dana? Why is he
half Jewish? After a few minutes, you realize, oh, yeah, just mom is there.
Mom is there. And there's
God of the universe is the other half. There we go.
So, but Mary was Jewish.
That's true.
I know everybody thinks she was Catholic, but actually she was Jewish. In fact, they called her Miriam. Can't get more Jewish than that. Okay. Moses' mother. When Moses was a little kid at the dinner table, she'd say, would you stop parting your chicken soup and just eat it?
That's a good one.
Well, if you like that one, we found another one from Moses' mother. And I think a lot of mothers will relate to this because you've heard other mothers say this. But boy, Moses' mother could really say it. I don't understand that kid. He sits in the bathtub for hours and he never gets wet.
That's a good one, too.
Well, see, I brought Dana here just to tell you.
I have another one for Moses.
You have another one for Moses?
Well, I've always thought if I was his mother, something I could imagine I'd be saying to him would be, Moses, it's time for dinner. Carefully set your staff down. I don't want any more snakes in the house.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one. Well, he says, Mom, it's a delicacy.
You know, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, in the Indiana Jones movie, they had, and then we have the Lost Ark and Harrison Ford saying, snakes, I hate snakes.
Exactly.
That's great.
I don't want snakes
well,
in the
Samson's
house.
Mother's kind of an obvious one. Put your father down now. All right. Now, this one, it's a little bit cutting edge. This is Mary Magdalene's mother. You remember Mary Magdalene? She says to Mary, "Why, any pastor would be happy to have you in his church, especially if their Sunday morning numbers are down. Remember, demon-possessed people are counted more than once."
That's not good.
It looks good on a board report, though.
And that was on
Mary,
an archaeological
find. And Mary had a lot of demons on her. They could have counted that as 40 or 50 extra people.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, Cain and Abel's mother. 20 points, Dana. Who was that? Cain and Abel's mother. Quick.
Eve.
Very good.
I didn't know this was going to be a quiz.
We have lovely rotisserie and luggage for you. All right,
yay.
Cain and Abel's mother, otherwise known as Eve, talking to Cain, giving him a little bit of advice, borrowing from her own life and her own romance. "What did I do when I got suspicious that your father was cheating on me? Every night after he went to sleep, I counted his ribs."
Oh, my goodness.
We now move on to the fourth saying found on a recent archaeological dig.
That just doesn't seem possible. It's an amazing find. It is.
It's an amazing find. This was John the Baptist's mother. He was complaining that he didn't have a middle name. She says, "Yes, you do have a middle name. It's the."
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Now, don't look at me. I'm just reporting what the archaeological dig found. Yeah.
You didn't write these.
No, you are just sharing them. Okay. Esau's mother.
Okay.
That was Rebecca.
Yes, it was.
She says, "Seriously, for a single meal, you gave up your birthright for a single meal? What do you mean you supersized it? Who cares?"
Like they had fast food, though.
That's, yes. All right. And Peter's mother, moving on to the number two position. Peter, when he was a little kid, "I'll ask you once more if you stole a cookie from the cookie jar. The answer is one yes or one no. Denying it three times makes you sound suspicious."
That sounds like a mother.
Okay. Now, Dana, the last one, as you'll recall from Sunday school, it's a little on the dark side.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got to be, what can I say? If it was included in the finds, it was included in the finds.
So you have to read it.
This is Judas Iscariot's mother.
Mm.
Being proud of her son, as all mothers would. "You're going to be famous someday. Just you wait and see. If you put all your mind to it, there's nothing you can't accomplish."
I don't like that one.
Well,
I know it had to happen, but I don't like that one.
It's a little on the dark side, as
I
said. Okay, well, that's a good time for a break. And then we're going to come back. And Dana, I'm going to prevail upon you to join me for the rest of the show. We're going to go through some email questions regarding my monologue and then some Bible questions. And it's just great to have Dana here because, again, not only a mother, but a cousin, a daughter, an aunt. I mean, she's an amazing woman. We'll be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Wright, and I'm helping Bob today with just sharing some of the emails and responses that he's gotten. You can communicate with Bob several different ways through Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net. You can also call in during the radio show while we're on the air. And that number, if you have the desire to call in the next half an hour, 1-888-344-1170. We'd love to hear from you. The next few comments I'm going to read are share their responses that we're sharing that people wrote in response to Bob's article about Benghazi, about his comments that he was just sharing. Evie said, pray for the American people that they will rise up and hang all out to dry, corrupt and disgusting leadership. Teddy on Facebook said, yeah, they can't handle the truth. Then it goes on, comments, these are written comments back to Bob's article again on the same one on Benghazi that was posted on Washington Times Communities. Oscar said, I just about fell over when I read this article. Thank you, Washington Times, for reporting the truth and calling out other propaganda outlets. The next one, interesting call name on this one, Thanks for Fish is the name of this writer.
Don't you love the names these guys pick up?
That is. That's a unique one. I'm assuming it's Christian, maybe? And
Get that impression.
I was thinking of the multiplying of the fish, no?
I can think of a lot of things I'm thankful for. Fish doesn't usually come to my mind.
All right.
Maybe
lobster.
I love lobster.
I was giving them more credit.
He didn't say thanks for lobster. He just said fish.
Yeah, well.
Oh, well.
All right.
He had some profound reason for picking that
name. Went to the feeding of the 5,000 when I read that, but probably not. Okay, so Thanks for Fish writes, there just isn't a lot to hang your hat on here. There are three accusations made here. Lack security, troops not deployed, and false talking points. Yet all of those can be seen as merely different opinions of the situation. There are no hard facts telling us that something was intentionally done to put our people at risk. Should we continue to focus on what wasn't done or what should be done in the future for our diplomats? It's really time to move on.
Yeah, well, moving on. Those are the talking points. Let's move on. Did people move on when we had that Abu Ghraib fiasco under the Bush administration? The New York Times had that about 40 days in a row on their front cover. And this was something that one or two soldiers did. So it's interesting. People usually, you know, they're very selective about when to move on. Yeah, of course, we all want to tighten up security. But before we can move on, we got to figure out what happened because this thing was a disaster. And we have more than accusations. Those accusations, as I said, were already backed up with emails that ABC News found. And way back in September, although it didn't make a difference to the election, we had hard evidence, not evidence, we had hard facts that the administration even admitted to, that the soldiers who were going to rescue the people at the Benghazi consulate were ordered to stand down. Liam Panetta says, oh, well, that was because, you know, we never send soldiers into harm's way. We don't send soldiers into harm's way. They bragging and bragging about how they went and captured Osama bin Laden. Those soldiers weren't sent into harm's way. This is nonsense. They had special units and task forces trained for those things. There were people ready and willing and wanting to go. We have all kinds of things. There's more that needs to come out, but there's plenty to indict the State Department and the White House just based on what we already have. So I would say, Mr. Thankful for the Fish, we have plenty to hang our hats on.
Yeah, I would agree.
But if you
that.
Like Obama and you like Hillary, nothing we say is going to make any difference.
Probably not.
And they say, oh, the Republicans are being too partisan. Well, is your defense of these guys, no matter what they do, could that be called partisan too? Partisan simply means you've chosen a side. I'm more interested in why somebody's chosen the side they've chosen. Everybody chooses a side. Why did they choose the side? That's true. The important question.
Well, maybe Thanks for Fish will write back and give us more explanation.
Maybe.
Probably not, though.
Maybe we'll all go ice skating where hell froze over, too. But maybe. Or maybe somebody who holds Fish's opinion, maybe we'll hear from them. Maybe they agree with Fish.
Okay, that's getting too deep for me. Okay, so let's move on. Dan wrote, the fact that our campaigner-in-chief boasts about having Al-Qaeda on the run while we had a terrorist attack on Benghazi and then covered it up is not only reprehensible, but despicable. The president and his subservients want to protect the president's status at all costs, in capital letters. And that has been done at an valuable cost of four innocent lives of four heroes who died in the process.
That was well said, Dan. Have you noticed that the guys that write their own name usually have better things to say?
Kind of straight to the point.
That's not always true, but it seems generally true. It's funny what people do over the internet. But that well said, Dan. That's exactly what's going on, Dan.
Nick's comment, he wrote in and said, I agree with Bob Siegel.
Whoa, Dana, that had a ring to it. Could you read that again? Could you read that first sentence again?
Nick says,
I agree with,
good?
I agree with.
I don't want to say
who?
That I don't know. Who is that
guy? It was just something about that first sentence.
Bob, let's see. Who is that man?
I agree with
Bob Siegel.
There's just something I liked about that first sentence. I'm in a good mood already, and I'm motivated to hear the rest of his comment.
You just want
to
hear
with an opening like that, how could the rest of the comment go bad?
I don't know. Let's see, because it might.
So okay.
He might just be starting out friendly.
Nah, I don't think so, but go ahead. Go ahead. Read
Let's see. So Nick says, yes, he does say, I agree with Bob Siegel about the fact that Obama could be called a Teflon president, and that's unlikely, and that it's unlikely that the Benghazi story will have a major effect on his presidency. However, Hillary is a different story. Her personality charisma is practically non-existent. In fact, when I first listened to her famous line, what difference does it make? The first picture that came to my mind was that of the Wicked Witch of the West. And I say this with great respect, Mrs. Clinton.
I'm assuming that was a little bit sarcastic.
I think that was. That definitely was. Although I expect the mainstream media to support Hillary in her election bid in 2016, it was encouraging to hear their usual probing questions to Jay Carney on May 10th. Anyway, given the multitude of questions that need to be answered before, during, and after the tragic events at Benghazi, it's unlikely that this important story will be suppressed from the news.
You know, Dana, it's interesting that he compared Hillary to the Wicked Witch of the West. And This was something we did on the show years ago. It was before I met you. You may not even be aware of this, but there is a whole place on my website in the radio section called Satire, where we have a lot of our old satirical sketches. And this was when Hillary was running in 2008. And it was early in 2008. In fact, it might have even been late 2007, now that I think about it, because the elections start earlier lately.
And, they do.
At that time, everybody thought Hillary was a shoo-in. Nobody was expecting Obama to come and sideswipe her unexpectedly. And we did a satirical sketch where I went to The Wizard of Oz, one of my favorite movies, and we took all these outtakes of The Wicked Witch of the West. And I had an interview with Hillary Clinton, where I was asking about her position on foreign affairs and her position on abortion. And I got the most scathing letter from one of our listeners. She accused me of trying to demean all women by comparing Hillary to a witch. Now, when we compared her to the Wicked Witch of the West, it was to be funny. That this lady says, you've gone overboard. You've become like Rush Limbaugh. Now, I took that as a compliment. I don't mind saying I have a great respect for Rush Limbaugh.
I know
you don't like Rush as much.
I don't.
But when people say it's inappropriate to make a political joke, I want to ask them, well, can I assume that you write Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show and The Colbert Report when they go after conservatives? Of course they don't. It's right. It's only funny when they're going after somebody that they disagree with, when their person has gone after. I'll tell you more about what I said to her, because we did talk about Hillary. We did a skit about Hillary as the Wicked Witch of the West. I'll talk about it when we return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Wright, and it's my pleasure to be here co-hosting today. And right before we went out on that break, Bob was about ready to tell us how he compared Hillary Clinton to the Wicked Witch of the West. Okay, I can hardly wait to hear.
Well, the only reason this came up today is that one of our listeners, or he was at least reading the Washington
Times.
Yeah,
Dan just wrote in. This was Nick.
This was Nick. He was mm-hmm. reading my online column version of what corresponded with today's monologue about Benghazi. And he said that when Hillary Clinton gave that "What difference does it make?" speech, it reminded him of the Wicked Witch of the West.
First thing he thought of.
And I had to remember that back in the 2008 election, when people thought that Hillary was going to be the shoo-in Democratic nominee, we did to have fun. We took outtakes from The Wizard of Oz, vocal outtakes of the Wicked Witch of the West, and your little dog too. Well, my pretty, I can have accidents too. And then I interviewed Hillary, and we used one of those clips. Now, one of our listeners just wrote me the most scathing letter. She said I did it out of a disrespect to women. First of all, that's not true. I wasn't disrespecting women. I wasn't trying to imply that Hillary looked like a witch. I actually think Hillary's an attractive enough woman. My problem with Hillary is her values. My problem is some of the positions she takes. And I think some of those are downright evil. But we were taking issue with her positions. We were doing it in a humorous way because sarcasm and comedy sketches sometimes will get a point across. And my point was that, you know, the people that object to conservatives doing it, it's always mean-spirited when a conservative does it. But when it's done on The Daily Show, when it's done on Saturday Night Live or The Colbert Report, and they go after conservatives with a vengeance, well, that's just funny, and they're not mean-spirited, and we should lighten up. I'm fine. I think The Daily Show and Saturday Night Live are hilarious. And I've laughed even when they've gone after issues that I agree with. But we need to lighten up on both sides. So I meant no disrespect. But I must say, Dana, this has kind of inspired me. Because I'm thinking maybe next week I either want to come and replay this, or it's so dated I should take those outtakes and re-edit it and interview Hillary again about Benghazi.
Current
things. So, boy, just thinking about how that lady just raked me over the coals. She inspired me to
do it again.
Play it again. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm glad Nick's comment inspired that. That is the end of the comments, though, about Benghazi. So we're switching over to
Dana's favorite
section.
Part of the show. Dana
I'm
loves
much happier in this
she
section.
She loves
yep.
the religious part.
Not
she does
so
not
happy
care
about
the
political.
About the politics.
No. Well, I care, but I don't like them.
The news can be depressing.
It is.
But
it very much is.
But that. If we're going to warn people to avoid depressing times ahead, then there's a rhyme and a reason for
that
it.
That is true. That's true. Okay, so we are moving on, and we have some really good questions today. So is it okay if I share with you?
Are they about Hillary and witches?
No. We're not on the political part anymore. I know you don't want to switch, but we're going to switch. So is it okay if I just read you the next question?
I have considered myself switched already in the past
tense. Fabulous. Here we go. So this one is from Carla. And Carla writes, "Hi, Bob. My question. At work, I am the only Christian. Coworkers say that people who are Christians are people who have a hard life or have gone through something bad and had nowhere to turn, so they turn to a church. No matter how I say different, they don't get it. I know workplace is no place to speak of religion or politics, and I'm not the one who brings it up. Any great suggestions to shut them up?"
Okay.
Carla.
Well, I do have some suggestions for you, Carl, although I would hope that instead of getting them to shut up, they will instead feel invited to talk with you more and ask for questions.
They're obviously talking to you about it because they're interested.
Some people don't show any interest in Christianity at all. In fact, I think the ones that argue are sometimes closer. The people that are kind of apathetic or laid back, "Oh, you're a Christian. Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that works for you.
Right.
Oh, that is so cool. Oh, that's beautiful." Yeah. And the ones that are kind of agitated, that could be because there's a little battle going on in their soul. But anyway, I do have some suggestions,
so what's your
Carla.
Advice?
My advice, first of all, Carla, I could use myself as an example. Is it only because people have a hard life that they turn to God? I'll just use myself as an example. I myself became a Christian during my second year of college. I was not living a hard life when I became a Christian. I was happy. I was spoiled. I came out of an upper middle class family. I was attending junior college. I was a commuter student. I was living at home. I had friends. I had girlfriends. I also knew, though, that I was a pretty selfish person. And that is exactly how the Bible defines sin, selfishness. Christianity calls people to take responsibility for their actions, even their thoughts and their natures, which, of course, we can't change, but we take enough responsibility to ask the Spirit of God to come into our hearts and change it. And yes, we also seek forgiveness, but we also make a pledge to live for God the rest of our lives. We can only do that with His help and power, but we make that pledge. Now, how easy is it for Christians to share their opinions of, say, abortion, or their opinions these days of same-sex marriage around the water cooler at work? You know, that doesn't quite fit into the crowd. I wouldn't call that the easy thing to do. I would call that the harder thing to do. Now, yes, it's also true that in times of trouble, we turn to God. I turn to God. In times of trouble, everybody turns to somebody or something. If they want to call Christianity a crutch, well, that's not why I became a Christian, but so be it. They can call it a crutch if they want. At times, Carla, you, I, your friends, Carla, my friends, everybody, at times we all need crutches. I'm sounding like Captain Kirk. We all need crutches. But who are they trusting? Who's their crutch? The government? Some relationship? A bank? A healthcare provider? Yeah, we all need crutches. The only difference is this. Our crutch is eternal. Our crutch can never be taken away. Our crutch will never be lost. Their crutches are temporal, unreliable, unstable, and for all intents and purposes, virtually non-existent. I hope that helps a little bit, Carla.
Yeah, and I'm with you on the fact that I became a Christian as a young girl. I was actually very young when I gave my life to Christ and grew up, and I didn't have difficult times until later on in my life when becoming an adult, you know, things happen in life. And I'm so grateful for that foundation because I do think it's seen me through, you know, God's mercy and strength are just so helpful in your future life. So, yeah, I'm not one of those people that became a Christian out of desperation either. I did it very young and very glad I did. So hopefully Carla will be more successful. I think it is great that her coworkers are talking to her.
Yeah,
I hope she doesn't get discouraged
that.
By that. Yeah, that's
and
a good thing.
And I hope the employers are consistent enough that if she defends Christianity, they don't play the separation between church and state card. But meanwhile, it was okay for her friends to put down Christianity.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's usually people can say whatever they want about Christianity. The moment it's defended, whoa, buddy, separation between church and state. Okay, we have a couple of other Bible questions, and we will return to them when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel and the beautiful Dana Wright.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Our program. This is Bob Siegel and Dana Wright. I should mention, we get email comments a lot from a person named Nick who reads a lot of my online Washington Times communities columns. We also have a Nick in the studio who's been on our show. He operates our tech board. It's not the same Nick, you should know. The Nick that we have here, he's opinionated too. He usually gives his opinion about movies, sometimes about politics. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree, and it's always fine. But you know, when the Nick in the studio wants to say something, he just says it. He doesn't need to send me an email. So you should know those are two different Nicks. So the Nick that was comparing Hillary to the witch, That was
it's not our Nick.
It's not our Nick. The guy that made a skit about Hillary and the witch, that was me.
That was Bob.
And I might replay that. I've been inspired. I've been inspired.
And Nick is the best tech op here. He is
wonderful. And yeah. He deserves to not be confused with somebody
with
else
Nick.
That wrote other things.
We got that.
Actually, I like the things that both Nicks say, but doesn't matter. We should still keep them separate.
This is true.
Know your Nicks. Keep them
separate.
That's
right. There we go. All right, Bob, are you ready for the next question?
I am ready.
All right. And it starts out with Bob. Amazing.
Oh, really?
Doesn't the idea that God created the universe completely destroy scientific law?
Well, that's a good brief question, and I have a good brief answer. Which scientific law? There is no law in science explaining how the universe came into being. All we know is that our universe had a beginning. Nobody can say with any certainty exactly what started the Big Bang. They just say that there was a Big Bang. Now, there are scientific laws which govern the operation of the universe after it came into being, which leads to an even better question. How do we have a law without a lawmaker? Square that one with science.
All right. Well, we took care of that one rather quickly. All right. Here's another one. I bet you this will take you a little bit longer.
Well, a little bit longer. This is the one I teased the audience
this was.
With at
this
the beginning
is the top of the show.
Show.
Yes, you brought this one up, and here it is. So let's see how quickly you can answer this one. If there is only one God, why are there so many different religions? That's
well,
a good one.
Well, the short answer is there just are, okay?
Okay, that's not fine.
That's not a good answer.
No, try again.
All right. Here's my try. We're moving now into the question of consistency. And I think it would help to start with the teaching of the ancient philosopher Aristotle, and I'm referring to what was called his law of non-contradiction. This law, and of course it's foundational to philosophy, this law states that two given truth claims must not contradict. If they do, at least one of them is wrong, and possibly they are both wrong. In other words, Dana, you're a mother, you have three children. While you were raising them, if one of them called you on the phone and said, "Hi, Mom, I'm coming home for dinner, and yet, in a way, I'm not coming home for dinner."
I would say, what in the world
you say,
is that
what the
mean?
Heck are you talking? Either you're coming home
are
for dinner.
Are you coming or not?
You're coming home or you're not, and let me help you. You are. You'd say something like that. Okay.
I would get a clarification,
okay,
yes.
Yes, and we would do that for anything. I mean, it sounds simple. It should, because we accept this idea without hesitation in every facet of life. Every facet of life except religion, that is. People are usually afraid to test religions. I think I just said taste religions. Well, you know, you could talk about tasting religions,
okay,
too.
Okay, stay on
But I'm getting
question.
On a tangent.
Test religions.
People are usually afraid to test or taste religions out of fear that they are going to be showing intolerance. Now, it should be noted that one can respect freedom of religion and freedom of somebody else's religion, even if they disagree with you, you can respect that without assuming that all religions are equally valid, because such a conclusion is intellectually dishonest. And I understand that nobody out there, I know you're not trying to be intellectually dishonest. I respect your plight. I respect your questions. But let me illustrate it this way, because I think you'll agree with this. I have a friend, he's another fellow apologist. His name's Cliff Connectly. And at times he and I would be out on the same campus at the same time and we'd hear each other lecture. And I got to hear one of his brilliant lectures once at the University of Minnesota. Noted apologist Cliff Connectly, and he was confronted by a student who claimed that all religions were basically the same. And here's how Cliff responded, and it was with a piercing analogy. Cliff said, "If I were to assume that all Chinese people were the same, it would mean one of two things. Either I'm a bigot, or I have not taken the time to get to know Chinese people. The same is true of religious assumptions." Isn't that an interesting analogy? Now, even when admitting that religions do, in fact, teach opposite theologies, many still stubbornly grasp the idea that somehow every one of them came from the same God. Why is it so easy to envision a creator who unveils contradictory information? Why must a belief in God be divorced from our God-given ability to think? Paradoxically, people are not afraid to put Christianity through the ringer. Its claims are confronted all the time. All the time. Dana, once while I was doing an open forum at Fresno City College, a young lady, an undergrad, she asked me about Mormonism. Now, I mentioned that Mormonism claims to go by the Bible, yet teaches polytheism, teaches that there are many gods, and that completely contradicts the Bible. The Bible makes it very clear there's one God. And so this young lady got very perturbed. She raised her hand. She says, "What right do you have to stand here and tell me that we're going to scrutinize somebody else's religion. I said, now hold on. For the last 2 hours, you and your friends have been doing absolutely nothing but scrutinizing my religion, Christianity. Doesn't the Bible contradict itself? How do we know Jesus rose from the dead? Why would a loving God send people to hell? I said, you've been asking me these questions all day. And this has not bothered me, I said. It's very appropriate, especially at an institution of higher learning when people make truth claims. You should challenge anyone who makes a truth claim. But it works both ways. Make no mistake. I will ask these same good, valid questions of other religions. Dana, she suddenly nodded because she saw that she'd had a double standard. And it became obvious to her. Her earlier skeptical questions confirmed an honest, inward conviction that all beliefs, even religious ones, must be examined. They don't get a free pass just because they're religious. We must test whether they contradict themselves. We must test whether they contradict each other. Now, there isn't the time right now to give every major religion its rightful day in court, but some brief examples will at least illustrate the process. For example, many Hindus believe that God and creation are one and the same. The Bible, on the other hand, paints a major distinction between the creation and the creator. If one person says God made the tree, while another says, no, actually God is the tree, we cannot possibly conclude that they are both correct, even though they each use a similar word, God. Of course, this leads us to no conclusion at all about the accuracy of Hinduism or Christianity. It is instead a conclusion about the fallacy of universalism. That's the belief that all religions are true. On the other hand, Hinduism makes no claims to historical verification. Christianity does, and that's at least a significant thing to note. There are also contradictions between religions which accept the Bible. The Hindus go by completely different scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita. But Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all have one thing in common. All three of them believe in the Old Testament. Judaism accepts the Old Testament. Islamists, Muslims, they accept both the Old and the New Testament. Islam claims that in addition to the Quran, they don't claim the Quran is an alternative to the Bible. They claim it's a sequel to the Bible. They claim right in the Quran that the Old and New Testament is the Word of God. Well, Jesus is described in the Quran also as a holy prophet, but not an incarnation of God himself. So the Quran denies that Jesus is God, but they claim he was a prophet. Well, the test for a prophet in the Old Testament, which Muslims believe in, says that a prophet must be accurate in everything he teaches. What did Jesus teach? Well, among other things, Jesus taught that he was God. If Jesus was lying when he said that, then he was not a prophet. But Islam claims he was a prophet. On the other hand, if Jesus was telling the truth, then he is God. But Islam claims he was not God. Either way, we have a rather serious contradiction. Now, Judaism, and I respect Jews very much. I come out of a Jewish home myself. Judaism teaches that the old covenant or testament or agreement will be changed after the Messiah comes. Messiah means anointed one. It's another word for Christ. Daniel chapter 9 actually computes this time by measuring the amount in Hebrew years with months of 30 days each. He gives a prophetic calendar. Daniel starts with a prediction, the return of the Jews from Persian exile when King Artaxerxes freed the Jewish slaves, and then the calendar ends with the Messiah's arrival, and the day is calculated. The day actually occurred on Nisan 10, according to the Persian calendar, or March 30th, 33 AD, according to the Julian calendar. Only one potential Messiah rode into Jerusalem that day, Jesus of Nazareth. If he was the Messiah, then Judaism's new covenant, called Christianity, is now in force. If he wasn't the Messiah, then Daniel was a false prophet. But Judaism considers Daniel to be a true prophet. We have found a contradiction with Judaism as well. Now, I must be making myself very unpopular right now. Please understand, I do respect the many Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Mormons, Universalists, and others I have met as honest and dedicated people. This does not keep me, however, from examining their truth claims. Well, Dana, it was a delight, as always, to have you on the show.
Thank you for having
me. Happy Mother's Day again.
Thank you.
And
I want to say happy Mother's Day to my mom as well. I appreciate her.
Well, I hope she's listening right now.
I hope so.
And if she's not, don't wish her a happy Mother's Day next year, just to teach her a lesson.
Just show her how to do it.
Because if she were really your believing mother, she'd listen to you when you were on the radio.
Not necessarily.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.